verse 53, page 95. Dharmo tapa nichaya shutayas tapam si brahmari kita padagavadayascha jiva yadattamatra bibhava prakata prabhava govindamari purusham tamaham bhajam. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power are maintained the manifested potencies that are found to exist of all virtues, all vices, the Vedas, the penances, and all jivas from Brahma to the meanest insect. The meanest insect doesn't mean a bad insect. Doesn't mean a mean and nasty, and mean means small, the smallest. Mean, the word mean means the tiniest or smallest. It's not like some, you know, scorpion or something, mean insect. You can say, and this is describing the wheel of karma and how the laws of karma and the wheel of karma is under Krishna's control. I draw the primeval Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power is manifested the manifest potencies in religion, irreligion, or all types of sins, and the Vedas, penances, all jivas, from Brahma to the worm and insect. Because it says, Brahmadi kita patagavadayascha jiva. So Brahmadi means beginning with Brahma, kita. Kita means a very tiny insect. It's sometimes described that a kita means the Indragopa. Sometimes in the rainy season, not in this place because it's like no rain, but in places that have rain, like Bengal or Orissa, during the rainy season, after it rains, on the surface of the ground, all these little red insects, because the eggs are obviously in the ground already, but when it rains, there's a certain type of moisture and humidity in the atmosphere. These insects take birth from the ground. And they're very tiny, about as big as the head of a pin. And they're red in color. They're called Indragopa. It doesn't mean a coward boy of Indra. Indragopa is a type of kita. Kita means little insect. And it's just little tiny red in color, and there's billions and billions and billions of them crawling around on the ground. Sometimes, I have seen them once in Yavit, after a rain, that they appear. It's a kind of a funny thing. And you see in the Ananda Vrindavan Champu and sometimes Shastras, they describe different things, and they say that what they described how the Mother Earth is revealing the ecstasy of her heart with the cover of Indragopa. In other words, it's a kind of a metaphor. It's a metaphor that the poetic writers use, because Anurag is a very intense. Love is red, obviously. Love has a red color. So intense love of Mother Bhumi, she shows it. How does she show it? So she covers the surface of her earth. Her grass stands on, and the little blades of grass standing erect. That's like her hair standing erect on her body. And then this Indragopa insects is like the color of her heart coming out of her body, on the surface of her body. Anyway, that's some of the imagination of the rasic poets of Lord Chaitanya's fold. But the point in verse in the discussion is, from the largest, most gigantic living entities like Brahma to the tiniest Indragopa insect, they're all moving by their karmic trajectory, and behind all that movement and controlling it all is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. Purport. By dharma is meant the allotted functions of varna and ashram, manifested by the 20 dharma shastras on the authority of the Vedas. Of these two divisions, varna dharma, that is that function which is the outcome of the distinctive natures of the four varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. Ashram Dharma is that function which is appropriate to the respective ashrams or stations of those who belong to the four stages, namely Brahmacharya, Grihast, Vanaprast, and Sannyas. Basically, it just says that there's Dharma means different particular activities. Dharma means religious, so there's particular activities that are given in the 20 different Dharma Shastras, which are part of the Vedas. And like Manu Samhita is one of the Dharma Shastras. And they give the actions and rules and regulations for a person to follow in the according to the social station of life or the spiritual station of life. Social station of life is the four varnas, social positions, and spiritual stations are the four ashrams. So it's called ashram dharma or varna dharma. Just like we have, there's eight codes for a brahmacharya. There's eight laws for a brahmacharya, but then it'll apply to a grihasta. Brahmacharya is not supposed to look at women, talk to women, meet with women, touch women, dream about women, plan to meet with women. All these are laws of brahmacharya, but they don't apply to a grihasta, at least in terms of his wife. He can't look at his wife, can't talk to his wife. Maybe a good idea, but nevertheless, that's not the laws of that grihasta ashram. So every ashram has particular laws. Anyway, it's a whole other discussion. All customary activities of mankind have been targeted in these two divisions. In other words, all the codes of conduct for human beings have been delineated within this system of, varna and ashram. Sins means nescience or ignorance, the root of all sins and sinful desire. Also the greatest inequities and sins flowing from them, and the ordinary sins, all sorts of unprincipled conduct. The category of the shrutis, that's actually in the Sanskrit, there's three categories of sins which are mentioned. And that we'll review again in my notes. That's what it's saying here. It says that regular sins, ordinary sins, and like that. The category of the shrutis means, because in the verse it says, dharmo tapapa nichaya, shrutiyas tapamsi. Shrutis means the original Vedas. There's the shrutis and the smritis and the Upanishads and the Puranas and all these things. So the original Vedas are the four, and that's why it mentions here. The category of the Shrutis means the four original Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, and Upanishads, which form the crest jewels of the Vedas, Veda Shiromani. The tapas, that's also in the verse, tapa, means all regular practices that are learnt with the view of the attainment of the proper functions of the self. In other words, tapasya means austerity or penance, and whatever practices are learned for the increasing or development of your righteousness or religious conduct, that's called tapasya. In many cases, for example, there's the form as the five tapasyas or panchatapas. These practices are of a difficult character with its eight constituent limbs and devotedness to the knowledge of the undifferentiated Brahman or included therein. So if you don't know what that means, it means that there's a type of a tapasya, because the verse mentions in the last first line says tapamsi. Tapamsi means tapa, penances and austerities. So they differ in the different ashrams and different varnas. So in yogis, for example, they'll do the panchatapas, which means that in a summer day like this, it's probably maybe a good day to do such austerity. They'll make five fires, north, south, east, and west, and then a fire overhead. They'll start building the fire at 11:30 in the morning, quarter to 12. And by 12:15, they have pretty good fires going. then they jump in the center there, and they have four fires in four directions, one fire on top of their head. Of course, there's one inside too, but they don't count that. So it's called Panchatapas. And they meditate internally on Brahman, and they're burning up all around on top of the head and on four sides. So that's pretty austere situation. And it's only to be done in the summer. You can't do it in the winter. It might be enjoyable in the winter. Supposed to pick the hottest day of summer, and hottest days, like, do it for a week or 2 weeks at a time. It's a good time if anyone wants to start. It's hard to find the wood, though, make the fire. All these are many distinctive features within the revolving round of the fruit of activities of conditioned souls. So, anyway, that's pretty clear. All the above forms are within the purview of the cycle of mundane work or karma of the conditioned souls who are wandering throughout the 8,400,000 species of life. Conditioned souls are embarked on a sojourn of successive births from 84 lakhs of varieties of generating organs. In other words, conditioned souls are moving through different species of life, and they have a lot of choices available. 8,400,000 species and so many types of varieties in each species. Like there's dog, that's a species. Dog, canis, it's called canis. Well, there's lots of varieties in dog. You can be a wolf, you can be a hyena, you can be so many kinds of German shepherds and dingoes, the Indian dingo. Indian dogs called a dingo. Actually, Southeast Asia, India, Burma, it's called a dingo, South Asian dingo. You know, the tail goes ding, ding. And the West tails go bong, dong. You know, they go down, dong. But in India, the tail goes ding, so it's called dingo. They are differentiated into different orders of beings. So these 8,400,000 species are spread out, just like they asked Prabhupada. They said, Prabhupada, there's 4 lakhs of human beings. There's 400,000 kinds of human beings. Does that mean that, like, Negroes are one species? They asked like that. He said, that means that Negroes are one species and white people are one species. And Prabhupada said, yeah, it's like that. There, even on this planet, there are many different kinds of species. There's aboriginal, there's civilized, uncivilized, and there's, like, you know, half man, half ape types, like Hanuman and Sugriva. Just like Jambavan. Jambavan was the king of the apes, but he had human form and had very wonderful features, but he was somewhat mixed up with those, you know, those forest creatures. But he was basically a human being. And his daughter was not exactly a, you know, gorilla. His daughter's name was Jambavati. And Jambavati married Dwarkadish, you know, Krishna's queen, one of Krishna's principal queens. So she's the wife of Rikshiraj or Jambavan. He's the king of the bears. It sometimes says king of the bears or king of the gorillas. So he was one type of species of human being. But he wasn't some, you know, kind of Neanderthal or Cro-Magnon man, you know, from a previous, you know, billions of years ago or something. So like that, it also includes the devas, the Gandharvas, the Kinnaras. Kinnaras are human beings. They have human head and form and leg, 2 arms, 2 legs, but they have wings called Kinnaras. And then there's Gandharvas and all kinds of different beings. And now on this planet and other planets, altogether, they make 4 lakhs. So some are listed here. Devas, Danavas, that means gods and demons. Rakshasas, humans, Manavas, Nagas, Kinnaras, and Gandharvas. Just like Nagas. What's a Naga? Naga is like the equivalent of the Greek mermaid. Ever hear of mermaid? Mermaid is like, she's got the tail of a fish. Instead of the usual tail of a lady, she has a tail of a fish, and then the top part is a lady, right? You've seen? Ulysses, in Greek mythology, Ulysses was a great, it wasn't so great really, but he was supposedly a great conqueror of armies. He could conquer armies and so many hundreds of men. He was a great fighter, Ulysses, 2,000 years ago in Greece. But he couldn't conquer his senses. So that's, of course, the greatest war to be won by any living entity, to be a controller of the senses. A very rare title in this world. You may attain the World Heavyweight Championship for weightlifting or boxing or wrestling or sumo wrestler. No. The World Heavyweight Wrestler. But still, as soon as a little sumi wrestler comes along, then you're conquered. And she doesn't even have to flex her muscles, just blinks her eyes, and you surrender everything and become her slave. So the strongest heroes and conquerors are easily conquered by the unstrung bow of a lady's eyebrow. So Ulysses, knowing his weakness, when he was sailing off to conquer another country and his boat, he was going by one island where many Nagas lived. There are many Nagas live there. And as mentioned in this verse, the type of species, living entities. And they call these Nagas sirens. Sirens, like we have in the on the fire truck. When there's a fire, there's a siren. You know, like that. Policeman or whatever. So siren means that they will sing and the ladies will attract by their voice. So Ulysses, he knew his weakness, although he could conquer powerful heroes and countries and subjugate entire kingdoms with his mighty army and his able direction. He told his men that when they get close to that island where all these Nagas lived, that they should tie him to the mast. They should tie him to the mast. Mast means where the sail is on the sailboat. Big sail is called the mast, the pole. Tie him with ropes there, because if they don't tie him with ropes, then the sirens will catch, the Nagas will get him. Because when he comes by, they will sing. And they have a tail of a fish, but they have the top side of a lady. And then he will get defeated by their elusive charms. So the Nagas are this type of personalities. So they, Kaliya had conquered many of these Nagas when he came over here, and he was enjoying in his subterranean kingdom on the lagoon of the Yamuna with hundreds and hundreds of Nagas, and they became his wives, Nagapatnis. Jaya Dvija Patni Jaya Naga Kanyagan. We sing that song by Siddha Krishnadas Baba. Wrote a song glorifying Vrindavan, and he glorified the Naga Kanyas. The Naga Kanyas, the wives of the Kaliya, called the Nagas, as is mentioned here, the Nagas. Kanya means the wives, or the virgin daughters can also mean. Kanya means virgin. So it's Dvija Patni. Patni means the wives of the Dvijas, the Yajna Brahmins. They were very fortunate. Their husbands were lost with Gyan. So they had Gyan, and they had Mathura Vas, but they had no Bhakti. So many people live in Mathura, and they live in Vrindavan, and they get Gyan, but they don't get Bhakti. It's not so easy. Sometimes they get Gyan to such an extent that they believe that there's no other Sampradaya but their Sampradaya. And there's no necessity to do kirtan, there's no necessity to do deity worship, there's no necessity to do japa. You just line yourself up with the bona fide parampara, and then that's all you have to do. So there are even people that preach these type of philosophies in the Mathura. So the Yajna Brahmanas, they were like that. They lived in Vrindavan. They said, our wives, or they heard something about Krishna, and now they're running, walking around the house singing some songs they picked up in the marketplace. Some mollies came here and sold them some garlands, for the puja of our Narayan Shila, and then they taught them some kind of Brijbhas songs about this Gopal or Rasa Bihari or something, and now they're going around the house. I don't know, these just stupid, simple, sentimental women. They just pick up any song in the marketplace and they sing it. Anyway, they don't disturb, let them cook and clean. Swaha, swaha, idam bhagavate vishnu swaha. So they do their jagyas, right? And they were very expert in their jagyas, mantra, tantra, visharada. Mantra, tantra, visharada. They're very expert in all these things. And they became so learned in all the Vedas, and they're holding classes, and they were astounding everyone by the elucidation and vastness of their knowledge and learning, and people were following, and they had a big following. But when Krishna came and begged for some bhakti from their hearts were dry as a desert. They had no bhakti in their hearts. Krishna begged for something. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhakti priyachati. He says, you can give me bhakti from your heart in the form of a leaf or water, fruit. So they came. It's a jagya. So many five kinds of fruits are there, five kinds of grains, so many spices. Oh, can you give some fruits for Kaniya and for Dalji? You know, they're nearby. Hey, get out! They didn't even speak to the voice. They just ignored him. Swaha, swaha. Excuse me. No. Didn't even look at their way. Didn't even glance at them. So the Dvija Patnis, the wives of the Dvijas, the Brahmanas, they had bhakti. And they got the mercy of Krishna. They even had vilas. Some of them had vilas to Krishna and attained the highest love for Krishna by their surrender and their simplicity of their heart. And the same way, so then the verse goes on, Jaya Dvija Patni Jaya Naga Kanya Gan. So the Gan means the group, the small group. There was a group of Kanyas, Naga Kanyas. They mention here the different living entities, Nagas. So Naga Kanyas, Kanyas means the virgin daughters, the snake daughters, the snake daughters of Kaliya. They were, not only were they distressed over the plight of their father, but they were attracted to the beauty of Govinda, like anybody would be. Notwithstanding that their father was getting pulverized, and beaten to a pulp, so to speak, or beaten down to a pulp by the kicking of and beautiful dancing of Govindaji. But they came flying right out of their little snake holes. They flew out of their snake holes and grabbed their best jewels and all the little goodies that their father had given them birthday in their different birthday parties. And they came running out there to Govinda, these Nagas, the Naga Kanyas. And they had jewels, because snakes, they have so many jewels, right? When the rains and certain nakshatras, they pop right out of their heads. Certain jewels during different nakshatras, just when they're in the water and the rain falls on their head, then a jewel will be formed there. You say, hey, not bad. You know, take it off their head and put it on their finger, you know, have a new ring. So in this way, they would collect so many jewels. And then their father, so they came and they wanted to offer. They started giving all these things to Krishna. Krishna, please, you know, save our daddy and, you know, take us also. You know, take us. And then he said, okay. So he took all their jewels and he also took their cholis too. Sanatana Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He took their cholis because they were off. They say, take all these things. They had necklaces. So he was busy taking their necklaces. Whoop! Oh, excuse me. So he took their necklaces and this choli is right next to the necklace. Whoop! And so they were like this and like, well, anyway, you know, no one other than you should be our husband. We're kanyas, we're virgin girls, and you're the only man that ever saw us. And once we saw you, we came out of our holes and never want to go back in again, you know. So then he took their cholis and he tied them together and he made a nice rope. And then he put it around the nose, through the nose of Kali, and he said, okay, let's go. Shoot. And he's like a horse, you know, and he rode him around the Jamuna for a while. That's in another kalpa. So, these are the Nagas. They have very exciting lives, some of them. Kinnaras and Gandharvas. These jivas range from Brahma down to the small insect, and they're infinite in type. In other words, they range from Brahma down to the insignificant insect. Each possesses unlimited different forms. They make up the aggregate of the conditioned souls from the degree of Brahma to that of the little fly, and are the distinctive features within the revolving wheel of karma. In other words, each possesses a certain potency, giving them proficiency in certain functions. But those potencies are not axiomatic. That means independent. They are only the manifestations of whatever power is sanctioned for them by Sri Govinda. So in other words, every living entity, as Prabhupada would sometimes say, every living entity manifests some type of a chintya shakti, inconceivable power. The inconceivable power of, for example, there's a little lizard that runs around the house. It runs around your wall eating bugs and stuff, and it makes sounds, tuck, tuck, tuck. But they have the achinti shakti, they can walk on the ceiling, like Spider-Man, you know, on the cartoons. They go up, and then they just go to, they can go to sleep up there, because they have little suction cups or something under their, you know, under their hands, and they just, far out. So they, all kinds of, and then flies, you know, flies can, you know, fly so incredibly, and so all living entities have some wonderful, incredible powers. So the human being has been bestowed with the unique feature, unlike any other living entity, he has the achintya shakti, whereas he can actually, the soul can get liberation from the world of birth and death. That's the achintya shakti, the magic of human life. But most people get mystified by the charms of Maya and never manifest the magic of life, which is the great tragedy of human life. Misuse of magic in the service of illusion. Every one of them is endowed with distinctive powers as individuals and is powerful in a particular sphere. But these powers are by their nature not fully developed in them. The degree of power and nature of property vary according to the measure of manifestation of the possessions of the individual conferred upon him by Sri Govinda. So different, every living entity has some power, it all comes from God, but some living entities have tremendous power, they're known as Avesh, Shakti Avesh. Everyone has some Shakti, but some particular living entities have a good, large measure of power given to them by the Lord. Some jivas, a lizard is a jiva, and he's on the ceiling, and he has that achintya shakti given by Krishna to sleep upside down on the ceiling. Narada Muni is a jiva. He also has power given to him by Krishna, but a lot more than the lizard. So they're both jivas, but the power conferred upon one jiva in the form of Narada Muni is unlimitedly more than that of the little lizard, because he's shakti avesh of bhakti. Bhakti Shakti Vesh. And along with that power is the ability to fly all over the universe in the self-same body. He can go to every planet in the universe, from Narayan Lok to Tapa Lok to, you know, any planet he wants to, and distribute the cause of bhakti. So there's no, you know, limit to his power in one sense. But they're both jivas, so that's what it means, that the degree of power and nature of that property, or nature of property, vary according to the manifestation conferred or given by Govinda. So, just to review again some of these words, because Jiva Goswami gives a tika on this verse. Dharma, of course, the first word of the verse, 53, is dharma tapapa nichaya shrutiyas tapamsi. Dharma means religion or duty. So, this, of course, the verse is basically talking about varnashram dharma and all these different living entities. So it's all part of the cycle of wheel of karma. And then this is kind of setting up this verse. Brahma's explaining the nature of the whole world. The next verse, he explains the nature of someone who comes out of that world by doing bhakti bhajam. So anyway, we said all that. So papa nichaya means all kinds of vices, means all kinds of sins which have their basis in ignorance. Ignorance is the basis of sin. You forget your identity, or forget your purpose in life, or forget who's the real enjoyer. We think, when we forget who we are and who is Krishna, and we forget what the real situation is, then Maya makes us remember a different line of thinking, makes us remember a different identity. Oh, I forgot I was the servant. So as soon as you forget you're the servant of Krishna, then Maya makes you remember. Because there's no such thing as having forgetfulness without remembrance. And you can't have remembrance without forgetfulness. That's why Krishna says in the Gita, Sarvasicha hamriti sannivishto matak smatir ganam apolanam cha. He says, from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So when you want to remember me, I simultaneously make you forget Maya. And help you remember me. But when you want to forget me, then I help you forget me and make you remember Maya. So this is how it works, that through Mahamaya and Yogamaya, you know, so when we forget that we're servants of Krishna, then we remember that we're enjoyers, which is illusion. Maya makes us remember, oh, I'm the enjoyer. Oh, I can have a good time now. I can enjoy this and enjoy that. It's a very tricky situation. So that's why we say, Jiva Goswami says, that all types of sin, the roots of sin is ignorance and sinful desire. There's three varieties of sin which are mentioned in the purport. It's around about a tenth line down. It says, sin means nescience, of course that means ignorance, the root of all sins and sinful desire. So in other words, sins means ignorance. In other words, ignorance is the cause of all sins and sinful desire. Also the greatest iniquities and sins flowing from them and ordinary sins. So actually what this is explaining, there's three different categories of sins. There's grave sins, mahapatak, less grave sins, anupatak, and general sins, patak, all which include all types of illicit conduct. That's just what's being included there when we say papa nichaya, means three varieties of sin. In other words, really bad ones and pretty bad ones, not so bad. Everything's like that. Actually, when one analyzes reality, or you analyze devotees, you analyze food, you analyze your nose, you analyze your teeth, your eyes, or anybody else's, you always come into three categories: good, better, and best. That's basically it. Or if you have the three modes of nature, you say goodness, well, three types of goodness, and passion, three types of passion, and ignorance, three types of ignorance. It always comes in threes, and it's like three into three into three. And Prabhupada used to use that type of mathematics when he was explaining these same 84 lakh species. He said, you have 3 times 3 is 9, times 9 is 81, times 9 is 8,400,000. He would kind of jump like this, you know, 9 times 9 is 81, and then 81, I don't know, from somewhere from 81 he got to 8,400,000. He said, and the reason he explained it like this, he said, just like an artist takes the three primary colors, red, yellow, and blue. Right? Red, yellow, and blue. These are the three primary colors, and you mix them up this way, that way, and you get unlimited colors, right? Millions of colors. So, you take the three modes of nature, tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun, and you mix 3 times 3, and you get 9. Times 9 is 81. Times 81, 81. 8,400,000 species. That's how Prabhupada made that projection with that analogy of the color mixing of the artist and the mode mixing of the grand artist Sri Krishna, mixing modes and creating colorful expressions in the form of 8,400,000 lakhs of species, and each one is a little bit different, you know, mix up of the different primary colors or primary modes. Krishna's mixing up, let's create one with a touch of ignorance and a good few strokes of passion and a big blotch of goodness. Okay, what comes? Oh, a cockroach. Wow, that's pretty cool. Okay, let's try with three strokes of ignorance, a couple blotches of passion, and a big dose of goodness. Oh, Bhakta Joe. And then the Bhakta program. Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting. Okay, well, let's see what else. Chop, 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 chop. Like there was a famous artist in the 40s named Jackson Pollock. He's a madman, but anyway, somehow he had some sense of aesthetics. And so he would put a big piece of canvas on the wall. This is like actually in the 50s and 60s, I guess. Big piece of canvas on the wall. Big piece like 20 feet by 8 feet. And then he would have all these colors and different brushes, oil paints. And he would take and go, and just dip his brush into really thick, whop, and then whop. He just throw it, you know, and like throw all 50 kilos of paint all over the canvas. It's really thick. And then it would just be all these splotches of green and black and millions of different colors. Then he, you know, probably was stoned on something or other. And then he would look at it and then add some more in this way and then take sometimes a knife, you know, like a knife blade and add thicker layers and stuff. And then he'd have an art show somewhere in New York and everyone said, oh, fantastic, great work of art, fantastic. He became famous even today. If anyone studies art appreciation, they must study the school of Jackson Pollock. It was a famous school of art. It's kind of like a deviation of French Impressionism, if anyone knows anything about art. It's kind of a hippie deviation of French Impressionism. And somehow it caught on and became quite fashionable. So Krishna seems sometimes, you know, like that. He just takes the modes of nature and throws them 100 different ways and creates all these wonderful bodies that have language and movements and reproduction and so many wonderful other features. So the rarity of human birth, this is what's being discussed here. He talks about the human species. So sometimes it's nice to be reminded of what our position is here in the wheel of karma. Jalaja Navalakshani. Jalaja means Jala Janma. Born from the Jal, or water, Navalakshani. There's 9 lakhs of species born from the water. There's one verse Prabhupada quotes. Jalaja Navalakshani Stavara Lakshamimshati Krimiya Urujasankyakya Pakshinam Dashalakshakam Trimsha Lakshani Pashava Chatur Lakshani Manusha. Chatur Lakshani Manasha. Well, there's 400,000 Chatur Lakshani Manasha. 400,000 species of human beings. 900,000 Jalaja Navalakshani. 9 lakhs of species. 900,000 species born in the water. There's 2 million species of trees and plants. There's 1,100,000 cockroaches. No. 1,100,000 insects. 1 million birds and 3 million animals. So out of all the human beings of the 4 lakhs, many are not civilized. And among those who are civilized, very few are actually following Vedic principles. And of those who follow Vedic principles, very few can determine the proper way to behave. We see that right here in Vrindavan. And of those who can determine the proper way to behave, very few behave in the best way and become real brahmanas. And of the real brahmanas, very few can understand the goal of the Vedas and become Vaishnavas. You could even take that even further. And those who become Vaishnavas, very few become worshippers of Radha and Krishna. And of those who become worshippers of Radha and Krishna, very, very few become worshippers of Radharani. And of those who worship Radharani, very, very few realize the highest essence of the worship of Radharani. If you want to keep going on infinitum to the highest point, because there's nothing, there's no one and no level of devotion higher than that exemplified by Premamayi Srimati Radharani. So that is the topmost point of discussion in terms of personality and attribute. When you talk about personality, there's no greater personality in the whole entire firmament of Ekapad Vibhuti or Tripad Vibhuti than Srimati Radharani. When you talk about attributes or qualities, there's no one who has greater attributes or qualities than Srimati Radharani, because her love is the most inconceivably unlimited in expression, that Krishna himself, the Supreme Lord himself, becomes bewildered by its display and desires, how is it that she loves me? I must try to taste that love. So, Jiva Goswami, he goes on to say in this verse, verse 53, he says that the gist of this verse is, what more needs to be said of Krishna's glories? That's a summary, the gist of the verse is the summary. The essence of the verse is, well, what more can I say? Govinda's doing everything. That's it. Class over. But he goes on, nevertheless. He says, Krishna's unlimited glories can be perfectly summarized in one verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know that verse? Very good. Chapter 10, verse 8. It's one of the Chatushloki, the four nutshell verses of Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak savam pravartate viti matva bhajantimam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna says, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything comes from me. The wise know this perfectly, engaged in my service with all their hearts. Buddha bhava samanvitaha. So, that's Jiva Goswami's. And then he says one other thing. He said in verse 53 shows Brahma's conclusion that everything is included within Lord Govinda. Whatever there is in existence is the potency of Govinda. So the verse mentions about the, at least in the purport, Bhaktisanta Saraswati, he draws out quite a discussion about the Varnashram Dharma. So, and the reason is because he wants to prepare the reader to receive the message of his next purport, which follows the next verse. So we'll read a little bit about this Varnashram Dharma. Because it's a scientific system given by Krishna, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnya Mayashrisam Gunakarma Vibhagasha. In the fourth chapter of Gita, Krishna explains how this system of social division and ashram division or religious division comes from him. So according to the physical and psychic natures of individual human beings, the Shastras assign specific duties to help them regulate their behavior. Varnashram Dharma is a Vedic system to accommodate and regulate the man's independent selfish desires. In other words, the Varnashram Dharma regulates our punya and papa, our sins and our good qualities. In 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Krishna instructs Uddhava about Varnashram Dharma, which is very much resembles chapter 12 in the Bhagavad Gita. And Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna tells Uddhava that one who has faith in hearing and chanting my glories and who is not very disgusted or attached to material life, he should achieve perfection through the path of bhakti yoga. But if one is not disgusted and fed up with fruitive activities and not awakened a taste for devotional service by hearing and chanting, in other words, if he's like this, he's not too attached and he's not too disgusted, then he can take up bhakti. But if he's too attached or he's too disgusted, then it may not be, he won't have success because he's too attached or he's too hard-hearted. So then the second course of action that he recommends to Uddhava is that he should act according to the regulative principles of Varnashram Dharma. A true Aryan is a person who knows the real purpose of life, which is to get free from birth and death and attain liberation. So he follows two types of religious principles. One type is primary religious principles, which means engaging devotional service to Krishna. But some people can't do that. They can't hack it. or it's like it's too much for them. They go to church once a week or once a year on Janmashtami. So That's most people. So they can't do the primary religious principle. So then, I mean, so they do the secondary regulative principles. They follow the regulative principles of Varnashram Dharma for the purpose of regulating their material desires and avoiding sinful activities. A liberated soul is beyond Varnashram Dharma because his only aim and interest in life is to serve and please Lord Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati referred to this type of Varnashram Dharma as Daivi. Daivi or Devi Varnashram, which means transcendental Varnashram. You're still in a Varna and you're still in an ashram, but you're not so attached to material life or to your Varna or your ashram, and you're not so disgusted with it, material life, so that you can, but you are steady enough and purified and determined enough to uphold the principles of bhakti and devotional service, so you can carry on in a spiritualized Varnashram Dharma, which will give you a very quick elevation, because it's actually primary. You're following the primary path regulative principles. So he called this the transcendental socio-religious system. Hearing and chanting about Krishna, this is religion. This is called Sanatana Dharma. So many people are engaged in so much dharma, so much homas and yagyas and all kinds of tilaks going in every direction, and neck beads and all kinds of crystal beads and yantras and mantras and tantras and deities and yatras and all kinds of tapas and yagyas and everything. But they haven't yet come to the point of hearing and chanting about Vishnu, which is Sanatana Dharma. So everything they're doing is wonderful, it's great, it's fantastic. It will elevate them and improve them and keep them in human life and keep them in the material world from Swarga to one planet to the other planet, but they'll never get out until they perform Vishnu Bhakti, which is the primary activity. Krishna consciousness frees one from all punya and papa and gives liberation. The example is given of the yogic brahmanas in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto. They are examples of persons very attached to Varnashram Dharma. They became very proud. They were pakka brahmins, very first class, Mathura brahmins. Please give me a donation. But they miss the actual goal of life, which is to attain Krishna. Unless Varnashram Dharma is mixed with devotional service, they will not develop any true saintly qualities, or transcendental realization about God will not manifest. So bhakti is the magic that brings about the transcendental metamorphosis of the living entity. So in chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita describes pure devotional service. Verses 6, 7, and 8 describe sadhana bhakti. And 6 and 7, Krishna says one should give up Varnashram Dharma. And then it's nothing required, that he's a swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. I think that's all for today. Any questions? Bhakti mama vijananti yavanyaschasmi tatvataha. Parivasa Sutra means that shloka. Sutra means, you know, sutra like means codified or condensed knowledge, like Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jignasa, or Aham Brahmasmi, those are called sutras. So the Parivasa Sutra means that essential shloka from which the entire theme of a book or a work or a Veda is develops. So the Parivasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Ete Chamsha Kala Pumsha Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam Indrari Vyakulam Mule Mridianti Juge Juge. That's in like first canto, chapter 3, verse 28, I think. It's explained that Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna, not Vishnu, not Ram, not Nisringa, not Narayan, Shiva, Brahma, anybody else, Krishna, Damodara Madhav, he is the Swayam Bhagavan, the original, absolute original form of Godhead, and everyone else, everything else, and everyone else expands from him. All the avatars, all the incarnations, etc. So the entire 12 cantos of Bhagavatam will manifest, will magnify and expand that principle. And the Parivasa Sutra of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we gave class on that. That's from the Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 4. Right? anarpita chiram tiram
karanaya vatirna kalu, where it says swabhakti priyam, it says
unat ujvala rasa swabhakti priyam. It's a verse where it describes that Lord Chaitanya has come to give this swabhakti priyam, this unat ujvala ras, this ujvala ras, this sringhar ras. Anyway, we gave the class on Gaur Purnima on that. That's considered Adi Lila chapter 1 verse 4 is the Paribhasa Sutra of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Any other questions?
When you go for tiny insects that are red in color,
and when they all come, when they all like, they kind of hatch out when it rains, they all come out of the earth, like they're under the eggs are in the surface of the earth, and the rain makes them hatch out, take birth. And there's billions of them. So when they're all billions of them are all just kind of hanging around there, it looks like somebody, you know, threw pieces of red carpet, like, you know, this is a carpet. Piece of bright red carpet, they put it on the surface of the earth, so it's brown here and brown there and some green little plants and grass, and all of a sudden there's this red area. So that red, that color red, which is now manifested due to this, is when Krishna, in other words, they explain, when Krishna's walking on the pasturing grounds, then sometimes Mother Bhumi, feeling so ecstatic by the touch of Krishna's feet on the surface of the earth, she manifests the intense love of her heart by covering her surface of her body with Indragopa. So this is poetic metaphor of Kavi Karnapur, Nananda Vrindavan Champu. Vast and deep, and his analogies are, if you ever read Ananda Vrindavan Champu, you'll start to understand how incredible his imagination is. And Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he writes about Lord Chaitanya, is one of the greatest poets that ever existed in the Gaudiya line, Kavi Karnapur. I mean, he sucked on Lord Chaitanya's toe as a baby. So, but Kavi Karnapur, he got to suck on the toe of Lord Chaitanya. Definitely, I mean, Rupa Goswami was embraced at Dashashwamedha Ghat, and he was empowered by an embrace. Sanatana Goswami was embraced by the order. I mean, was empowered by the order. And Kavi Karnapur was empowered by the order of Lord Chaitanya by sucking on his toe. When he was a little boy, just a little boy, Lord Chaitanya said, "Chant, chant." And was just born, and he wouldn't chant. And then Saru Damodar said, "Well, my Lord, you've induced the whole world to chant the holy name. And when you went through Jharkhand, even the tigers were chanting, Harivo, Harivo. And the lions were chanting, and the deer were chanting, and the birds were chanting, and the doves, everyone was chanting. You've induced the whole world to chant. But yet this boy does not chant, even in front of you, despite your request. It must be that he's chanting in his mind." So that happened one time. So then he came again a second time. So Lord Chaitanya smiled. He thought that was a good joke by Lalita Sakhi Surab Damodar. He thought that was pretty clever. So, because Kavi Karnapur, he didn't say anything. Then he came again second time. He was only about 3 years old this time. And he said, "Chant." And then he spoke this Sanskrit shloka, beautiful Sanskrit shloka, composed on the spot, glorifying that Krishna is like a blue sapphire necklace resting on the breast of the gopis or something, adorning the breast of the gopis like a blue sapphire necklace. Some beautiful, rasic Sanskrit shloka. A little kid. Everyone's looking at this kid. Wow, where does this come from? You know, he's only 3 years old. How does he know about all these things? Or how, you know. So that's because when he was only a month old, he came on the toe of Lord Chaitanya. He was always thinking of all these kind of, you know, high think, you know, ujvala ras. So Kavi Karnapur has given us such wonderful books.